Chayama. So today we take up the chapter on the four austerities and the four liberations. So basically, austerity, the word, there are two, three things here. Austerity means the two ways it, in which it is used, how to be austere, how to be conserve something. That's one sense in which the word is used. Second is, which is the meaning here, it's used in the sense of tapasya. So actually tapasya also comes from that, you know, it comes from the root is tap. So when you withhold an energy, concentrate it. So when you concentrate it, it generates, it becomes more and more intense, it generates heat, and then you diffuse it. So it becomes diffused in the world. So tapasya implies by its very nature concentrated energy of spiritual endeavor. Then it's called tapasya. Otherwise, we use it very loosely that, you know, going through education is a tapasya, marriage is a tapasya. That is true, but it doesn't bear the fruit of spiritual seeking. So normally when the word tapasya comes in mind, we think of external things, because partly because they are easier, partly because they create a kind of show and ostentatiousness. But it is not that which Mother and Sri Aurobindo, and I must add Sri Krishna speaks of. All of them speak of the inner tyaga and not renunciation. So in general we need to understand that tapasya is not about what time you wake up, what kind of food you are eating, what kind of dress you are wearing, and you know, how many hours you are spending in meditation, how many. That's not the main purpose of tapasya. They are good things, they have their own place. But tapasya is about how inwardly to remain in an inner concentrated state, concentrated upon the divine. This is the essence of tapasya, and how to make these instruments ready to manifest the divine. Because in this yoga, there is also this aspect of manifestation. So it will not do that we just sit in meditation, have some wonderful experience, but the body, mind, vital are not ready, not capable of expressing anything. So this is the basic sense of tapasya. It is not self-mortification. It is not going fasting for 40 days, wearing a particular dress. All this has nothing to do with spiritual life. And some of them, as the Mother and Sri Aurobindo, and again I must add, Sri Krishna says, it is asuric in nature. There are people who externally torture their bodies. All that is asuric in nature. It does not foster the divine element within us. So this should be one thing which is clear. Now, then, what are the aspects of tapasya? So here the mother says that there are four main aspects of tapasya, four things which have to develop through tapasya, and she uses them as tapasya of love, tapasya of knowledge, tapasya of power, and the tapasya of beauty. So we see it corresponds to these four elements: psychic, love, mental, knowledge, vital, power, and the physical, which is beauty. So these are the four aspects of the divine which must be expressed in earthly life. So how are we going to prepare ourselves so that these things can manifest? So basic principle, if we read through the entire, it's a very long essay, and probably we'll do it in two parts, let's see. But basic principle behind it is that there should be, one is a certain kind of inner detachment. Then there should be discernment. This is most important. If you read through the writings, there is a constant choice. And there has to be discernment. And the third is balance and moderation. So an excess in any direction, that I am going to fast for many days, I will go without sleep, all that is not tapasya, but quite contrary. Particularly for sleeping and fasting, the mother even goes on to say that it tends to make the nerves overactive. They make the nerves excitable. So balance, moderation, inner detachment, and discernment, these are the cornerstones to basically understand. So with this background, let us read some very beautiful, powerful things which Mother reveals to us. Okay. First thing, she says very clearly, austerity is usually confused with self-mortification. And when someone speaks of austerities, we think of the discipline of the ascetic who, in order to avoid the arduous task of spiritualizing the physical, vital and mental life, declare it incapable of transformation and cast it away ruthlessly as a useless encumbrance, as a bondage and an impediment to all spiritual progress. So this is, we have to, particularly the Indian mind has to understand this. Sri Krishna has said the same thing how many years? 4,500 years back. Still we don't understand. Still our idea of a spiritual person is the Naga Sadhu. And the lesser, the better, the more he is able to, you know, that idea is the Dhuni Jama ke baitha hai, is, you know, sitting in Shamshan with some fire lit and, you know, in cold season he is staying without any kind of blanket. This is regarded as a austerity. Now this is a tapasya, but the Gita speaks specifically of this as an asurik tapasya. So we'll read about it in the ancient Puranic literature, where also it is there. So we'll see that Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, they stop eating, they are standing on one feet and doing that kind of waiting for the divine until he gets very divine also feels better to do away with this fellow, otherwise because you are torturing the divine inside by doing it. So this is the first thing she explains. And then she says, before she would describe that, it is the question of ascetic practice which they mistake for spiritual disciplines. These practices, which consist of ill-treating the body in order, so they say, to liberate the spirit from it, are in fact a sensuous distortion of spiritual discipline. It is a kind of perverse need for suffering which drives the ascetic to self-mortification. And Mother was so particular that generally people who are into sannyas and all, they harbor many things which are very dark and dangerous inside. And it's best to avoid this kind of humanity, this kind of people. It is an unhealthy seeking or a subconscious need for violent sensations. In reality, these things are very far removed from all spiritual life, for they are ugly and base, dark and diseased, whereas spiritual life, on the contrary, is a life of light and balance, beauty and joy. So this should be completely engraved. See how they are bringing out those profound truths of the Gita. Whenever I read it, I remember Sri Krishna even says, yukta har viharasya, even resting, having, getting, spending, even entertainment, enjoying yourself, all this should be in balance and in light, not in terms of debasing yourself. It is much more difficult to lead a life of moderation and balance, in equanimity and serenity, than to try to contend with overindulgence in pleasure and the obscuration it entails by overindulgence in asceticism and the disintegration it causes. So any kind of overindulgence, indulgence, whether excess or in terms of negating things, both are harmful. It is much more difficult to achieve the harmonious and progressive development of one's physical being in calm and simplicity than to ill-treat it to the point of annihilation. Now with this background, she speaks of these fourfold tapasya: tapasya of love, tapasya of knowledge, tapasya of power, and tapasya of beauty. And she says that they will all lead to a certain result. And then she starts first with the body, which means she starts in the reverse order: beauty, power, knowledge, and then love. Because body is what is most directly tangible thing to us. One must know how to avoid becoming a slave to one's habits. This is so important for the body. That, you know, I have seen people having food in a particular time, which is very good because it is regularity and discipline. But it becomes so much enslavement that if there is a little bit delay, they become very uncomfortable about it. So it's important to observe, have certain degree of plasticity. However good they may be, the greatest flexibility must be maintained so that one may change them each time it becomes necessary to do so. So it applies to all kinds of these habits. I think one of the big advantage of transcontinental travels, it breaks your all these idea that you have to, you know, do things. It's good to do them at a certain point, body works best. But otherwise, if you don't have the opportunity, like I can just give an example, I take a walk every day, 40 minutes. So if in case when like you're traveling, so what do you do? So I roam around on the airport, I see my time. I don't use a timer, but I just see generally, you know, I walk. So in airport, you can do 45 minutes, 50 minutes. So it is you're giving the body the needed exercise. That's what is important. Mother says you're walking up and down the staircase. So that also if you do consciously, it becomes an exercise. So essentially it's about that. One must build up nerves of steel in powerful and elastic muscles in order to be able to endure anything whenever it is indispensable. So many things, these nerves of steel, people wonder how to develop it. One of them is deep breathing. One of them is simply to practice enduring through the different, say, heat is there, cold is there, weather changes, people change, situations change. So the nerves normally react. That's why there are people who can't withstand. Let's say if there is an accident or something happens to someone, their reaction is, oh my God, what has happened? Now nerves are unable to bear this information. Even if the music is a little loud, it should not be. But if it is a little loud, they get very uncomfortable. They start putting their hands to the ears to block the music. Or if they see a sight, they become very uncomfortable. So nerves should, while she's not saying you should expose yourself to these sights, but if these things are there, you should be able to endure them without having a breakdown. Say in a war-like situation, sirens going, all these. So in military, these things develop, but otherwise it's important to be able to endure. Sometimes smell, some people cannot eat food because they get smell of meat, they get smell of fish. In USA, if you cook South Indian food in your house, you know, somebody may call, I don't know, the police or who, 911, that this smell I cannot tolerate. Such nice summer smell, and they cannot tolerate. I was very surprised. I said, even with that closed door, he says, yes, in case the smell goes, and there will be a problem. And I have seen one extreme instance, which is people talk very highly of places like Singapore. Be careful what we are talking, you know, material paradise. So there is a story of one bird which would chirp, real story. The person herself has told that a bird is chirping and disturbing the sleep early morning. Imagine. So if the bird is chirping, so it happened that because that bird was disturbing the sleep, she informed whoever are the concerned authority to make sure that, you know, they do something about it. Now, what are they going to do? She found there are no birds in the colony after that. So this is the kind of civilization we tend to build. We can't endure. You see what happens in a place like my first experience was in San Francisco, where suddenly, oh my God, it's a traffic jam. But I saw the car is moving. So I said, traffic jam means what? I used to traffic jam for hours. We build nerves of steel. By default in India, you develop the yoga and the nerves of steel with all the roads and everything. So the traffic jam meant that the car is moving slowly. So what distance you could cover in 15 minutes, you are covering in, let's say, half an hour, 45 minutes. So that's a jam. I say, wow, this is very good. This is called a jam. So this is how the nerves of steel are built, simply by developing endurance. And you don't have to do anything special. Life will give us enough opportunity. So, nerves of steel. There is an example of how somebody kept on shouting at Nalnida. Nalnida is listening. See somebody, oh, you people will start vibrating with that anger and react. Nalnida listens. After 20 minutes, he simply says, "Hoi gelo? Are you done? Over?" And then he walks away. This is called nerves of steel. You're not reacting, responding to, you know, every little situation. A physical culture which aims at building a body capable of serving as a fit instrument for a higher consciousness demands very austere habits, a great regularity in sleep, food, exercise and activities. So basically, these are the four main things: food, work, sleep, exercise. These are the main four areas in which the body is involved in one way or the other. So the first principle is that one must strictly shun all excess and every vice, great or small. One must deny oneself the use of such slow poisons as tobacco, alcohol, etc. So thankfully she is not further qualified, etc. But I suppose it's about coffee mainly and tea. But she has left it out of infinite mercy. But yes, in it should be, everything should be in moderation. Excesses, certainly alcohol, tobacco harm. That's known. Actually, it's well known that alcohol and tobacco harm the brain. So brain is the seat of consciousness. So if the brain itself is harmed, how is consciousness? There is no instrument. It descends through the brain. So if the brain is not working well, if it is harmed, it gets accumulated. Also the lungs, which are the instrument of the life force. So tobacco and alcohol are harmful. So this is not something which is good from the spiritual point of view, not moral. She is not talking anything about morality here. It's all if one wants to practice the spiritual life and spiritual discipline, particularly in terms of cultivating a healthy body which can be an instrument of the divine. And then very important, the all-absorbing interest which nearly all human beings, even the most intellectual, have in food, its preparation and its consumption, should be replaced by an almost chemical knowledge of the needs of the body. So this is, of course, we know the time spent on menu cards. This is the issue you can know. So many different menu and different, you know, composition and how this is prepared. It's okay, it's fine, but to spend so much time in thinking about what food you are going to eat, take something which is healthy, balanced, is okay, to taste. Each one's taste is going to be different. And then comes the austerity of sleep. So mother speaks here about the quality of sleep and the quantity of sleep. Quantity of sleep, generally Sri Aurobindo and the mother both have said about 7 hours in a ventilated room. So 7 hours of sleep is the average sleep which is required. Some need about 6.5 hours, some need about 8. It depends. Modern science is 6 to 9 hours. So 7 hours of sleep, best time is before, you know, little before midnight, around 10, 10:30, because sleep hormones go along with that. So it's like you are going in sync with the body's mechanism. And waking up just before sunrise, maybe around 5:30, is a very good way to, by and large, it provides you 10:30 to 5:30 is the needed 7 hours. Little bit plus minus is fine. And she speaks about quality of sleep. So there she says, animated discussions, you know, TV program which are very exciting, or music which can be very titillating. So all this is best kept away. Maybe some soft music, and most importantly, in those who are fond of meditation can meditate for a short while. Or she says, just concentrate your mind on some higher ideal. So for us, it can be just simply mother in whatever way we conceive. And then with a little prayer while we are drifting into sleep, that may the sleep rejuvenate us, may make us healthy. And then she says, if there is a sleep problem, you can try a little bit fruit juice or soup or something like that just before sleeping. A little cup of milk. It's very interesting. She speaks about the cup of milk, because milk actually contains tryptophan, which is a sleep-inducing agent. So when I had read, I said, it's recommended even by doctors. Now they don't recommend, because now they're sleeping pill. Otherwise, take a cup of warm milk. So it is supposed to be very good, but I don't know what is the alternative for vegans, because it's the normal milk which contains it, not soya milk and all that. So L-tryptophan is one of those chemicals which is actually sleep-inducing. So it helps the secretion of melatonin. So this is the one very good simple way. So this about food and sleep, and then she speaks about work and exercise. So exercise, again she says that each one can pick and choose what suits your body best, but whatever you do, do regularly. One of the best things that doctors recommend, and she speaks about it, that should be in consultation with people. Well, is walking is the best exercise. And if you ask me, there's proper research studies that 35 to 40 minutes a walk, a day walk, 5 days a week, it guards you against many diseases like heart disease and all. It's just giving the body that needed exercise. Now, some people overdo. They think walking is good, so we can walk 2 hours. It's dangerous because your body is not normally meant for that. And if you do it, you are likely to precipitate a heart attack. So it's not about, okay, walking is good, so the more I walk, the better it is. It's almost like saying a day of fasting may be good, so the more I fast, the better it is. No. So moderation and balance. Then comes work. So in work, what is the austerity in work? Very beautiful, she's saying. It consists in not having any preferences. And in doing everything one does with interest. So here everything. See how similar it is to the Gita, where the Gita speaks of sarvakarmani. It may be cooking, cleaning, washing. It would also include things like eating, speaking. In everywhere, whatever one is doing, reading or desk work or manual work, any work. So it should not be with the preference, I won't do this work. I can't do this work. Now again, she is saying from the perspective of spiritual discipline. And life will offer enough opportunities for this. So she says there should be no preference. And in doing everything one does with interest, for one who wants to grow in self-perfection, there are no great or small tasks. None that are important or unimportant. That we know, Samam Brahmam. And the Life Divine Shobindo says that the Brahman is equal in all. It invests that much energy in in the development of an anthill, as in the making of the stars. And we can see that in, as Shobindo says, in the pattern and bloom of the flower he is woven, in the luminous net of the stars he is caught. And the hand then sent Jupiter spinning through heaven, spends all its cunning to fashion a curl. So whatever work may be there, the divine does not take it, this is important, this unimportant, this idea of categorizing work into this category. We should leave that completely if we want to be seekers on the path of spiritual perfection. This one thing which I have seen very beautiful about the ashram, there are many things beautiful, but one of them which is beautiful is people are not graded according to the type of work you are doing. It's not like somebody giving lecture is a big person and somebody who is cleaning utensils in the dining room is not. No, that's not the way to do it. Everybody, whatever work is doing, and if you are sincere, and whatever work one is doing becomes sadhana. So there is no preferences there. All are equally useful for one who aspires for progress and for self-mastery. And then she says this leads us quite naturally to liberation in action. Austerities and liberation. What is the liberation in action? One can take up any action whatsoever without preferences. Leave it the next moment if necessary. We see this in the life of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. And Sri Aurobindo has described this beautifully, that the sword has a joy in being kept aside, joy in the battle, joy in when it is broken, that equal joy discover. So whatever work comes to a lot, we take it up. If it goes, it goes. So we should not feel that, oh my God, why have I lost this work, and think about it. So she says, for in one's action, one must be free from all social conventions, all moral prejudices. However, this does not mean that one should lead a life of license and dissoluteness. So what is she speaking about in terms of the moral prejudices and the social conventions? So social conventions, I remember one of my own example working here in the marbling section. So I was selling saris and making bill for that. So one day suddenly some of my Air Force associates came. And the moment they were entering, so I welcomed them at the door. They thought that I am here by chance. So happy to meet you and all. So After 2 minutes of pleasantries, I asked them, what are you looking for? He said, no, no, don't worry. Call the person who is the showroom. I said, you tell me what you want. Till then, I didn't say that I am the showroom person. So, you know, started showing them this sari, that sari. So they are looking at it. Why are you showing? Dr. Pandey, call somebody, Wing Commander Pandey. I said, no, 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 I am here, working here. I am the one who is meant to show you all this. So they got so embarrassed that after some, they got embarrassed. And they walked away without buying. I kept telling, le lo ye achha hai. But so you see, this is the so social conventions. Because you are not supposed to do this. You are a doctor. How can a doctor be doing this kind of a work? So this is social convention. The other is moral prejudices. Moral prejudices is like, you know, Ravindraji's example and Rishabh Chanji's example. So Ravindraji was pure vegetarian. He was asked to distribute eggs. So as the story goes that when he would, a mother has said he has to do it. So when he would pick up the egg and give it, it seemed like he is incurring some great sin. He is picking up like this and giving it with a jerk. I'm done. And a sigh of relief. And Rishabh Chanji went still further because he was given the task of killing the bugs in a cot, furniture section. So he was very happy that mother has given me work in furniture section. He is writing a thank you letter, but when the mother's command came, you have to kill the bugs. So he keeps that letter, writes to Sri Aurobindo. Perhaps he does not know I am a Jain. I'm not supposed to kill bugs. And Sri Aurobindo writes, whatever work mother gives you is meant for your progress. Finished. So if you start doing all that now, these are moral prejudices. So, but she is saying it does not mean licentiousness. So she is clearing it. It doesn't mean that we'll do anything, lead a life of licentiousness. On the contrary, one imposes on oneself a rule that is far stricter than all social rules. So here even husband and wife are supposed to live, you know, in separate rooms. So it's a self-imposed rule. It doesn't matter, you know. So all these, for it tolerates no hypocrisy and demands a perfect sincerity. And then finally she says, one must abstain from all pleasure seeking, including sexual pleasure. So here she speaks that each sexual act, because it's a degradation, it degrades the energy. Now, obviously, there are people who read this one line and start practicing that, and they start going into all kinds of challenges. So she has said there is a process and there is a way. So they must know that when there is a tendency which has come in nature, so don't feign to be a Shukdev or a Sanat Kumar. So you have to go through that process, but you must know where you are going, how to do it. So Sri Aurobindo speaks about Sanyama followed by Nigraha. So there is a process to do it, but basically one must understand that sexual process and the logic of it. Again, it's nothing to do with morality, because morality is with my own wife, it is okay. Or if we love each other, it is okay. But with somebody else, it's not okay. So it's not about morality. The logic behind it is that the same energy which if transmuted changes into spiritual energy, which is various, going through the process of ritas, tejas, ojas and various. The same energy is lost into either pleasure temporarily, and one can actually experience, anybody who is a little sensitive, after that initial thrill of pleasure, there is a fall into some kind of very dark inconscient state. And if one is conscious of the dreams, one can see exactly where one has fallen. So there is no doubt about it that, you know, purely from a spiritual point of view. But again, all this not to induce guilt and start behaving like a, you know, neurotic, but it's to understand that why the sexual act, is, he says, is always followed by a longer or shorter period of unconsciousness that opens the door to all kinds of influences and causes a fall in consciousness. This is something one can observe, because everyone walks this way at some point, and it definitely opens doors to all kinds of serpents and that kind of energies, which are very dark, because it's like the consciousness dips into the darker realms. But again, she says very clearly that achieved not by coercion and suppression, but by kind of inner alchemy. as a result of which the energies that are normally used in the act of procreation are transmuted into energies for progress and integral transformation. So what she is giving us a hint here, that not by forcibly outwardly we are suppressing, but inwardly we are indulging. That is dangerous. So the process is, she says, inner alchemy. Inner alchemy, and she is saying about the energies for progress. That means the more we have the aspiration. There is no doubt that after sexual act, it takes time to pick up the thread of the fire of aspiration. Of course, once one has gone through and come out of it, then so evident. So the more the fire of aspiration burns towards progress, and even any kind of progress, even learning something new, even reading something which is sublime poetry, it's called in psychology as sublimation. So that's the inner alchemy, where one form of energy is transmuted into another, but by the fire of aspiration, it becomes so much more easier. So by the fire of aspiration, it turns upward. Automatically it turns. Not that one has to do something, but because the consciousness is turned more and more towards the divine, so automatically, slowly, it tends to become weaker and weaker, and then it changes. So she is giving this hint here. So this about the physical. Then she speaks about the vital education. Now what is interesting is that she is talking about the tapasya of beauty. All this is about tapasya of beauty. So how does it lead to beauty? So she is not prescribing that, you know, that your dark complexion will become fair. That's a wrong understanding of beauty, in fact. She is not saying that, you know, you'll become a zero figure. No, that's never the goal. But there will be a harmony. Beauty here is about harmony. So a harmonious, balanced life creates a harmony within. And it can begin to reflect even on the face. All our inner states begin to reflect upon the face. So the beauty in terms of harmony. And she even goes on to say, there are people who are fat, but they are not ugly. So we must understand the difference. What she is speaking of beauty is very different from our conception of beauty, because our taste tendencies are all distorted. And I have a very simple example for it, because when people speak about it, so I have asked them putting a parable or fable of Akbar Birbal or Tenali Rama in reverse. So I asked them, is your mother beautiful? You see, the mother is one of the most beautiful women in the world. I think anybody will testify to it. What is it that makes her beautiful? Something about her which in totality you get a sense. Of course, she may not be beautiful with regard to your dad, but with regard to the child, she is beautiful. Somehow her best comes out, and you know, you always remember your mother with grace, your grandma with those little wrinkles, and you know, that twinkle in the eyes and that joyous smile, because she has gone through life, seen it all. That loving care, that tender touch, all this, ask anybody, most of the people, I mean, I'm sure many of us, because we are not tainted by this idea that she must look a zero figure, she must be fair complexion, all slim and trim, no. But they have always exuded a sense of beauty, and they were not doing any tapasya. So we can just imagine that when somebody does tapasya, of beauty and this harmony tends to dwell, the person becomes so pleasant. The paradox is, when you stop seeking pleasure, you become pleasant. So that's how the Gita puts it. The Gita puts it that, you know, people who are who love the Lord, their presence is very soothing to everyone. So nobody gets agitated by their presence. Whereas there are other people, they may be very outwardly beautiful, but their presence is very agitating. And I can tell you some of these politicians and film actors. If you, I have been nearby in certain occasions, and instantly you feel this is a kind of a vital horror which is moving around you. I often use the word bhutage. It's a feel, a real feeling. You can experience that vital, that glamour which is very dark. Which is, and the thing I used to remember, I don't say that all actors are like that or all politicians, but generally what I've experienced is that they carry around them an atmosphere which is like what is described in the Vedas as valas. Valas are one of the kind of four asuras who clothe themselves in a shining light. So they will look like, you know, walking and with all the smile and people around and the best of dress, whatever it is, ghadi or whatever, wearing around. But you will feel that atmosphere which ambition and this kind of glamour and desire and pleasure seeking brings. It's a very dark atmosphere. So beauty and harmony, this is the tapasya, beauty, to bring out your inner beauty and make the body an instrument to radiate that beauty. And when that beauty radiates, then it is not only pleasant, it is a great help to the earth to just radiate this inner beauty and harmony. So this is the tapasya beauty. Then she speaks about the tapasya of power, where she speaks about the austerity of sensations. So why is she speaking of sensations? So sensation, because in Sanskrit we have a very nice word called ahar. So ahar is not just the food we eat. Ahar is absorbing all that is around, all the through the senses. We take ahar. So there are people, like they say, rakshasas, who eat away the energies of others. Even that is ahar. It is true, you'll feel depleted. You come out of the proximity of these people and you feel as if you are drained out. There are others who enrich you. So there is this sensations through which many things are entering our consciousness. And that's what she is reminding us about, the austerity of the sensations, the tapasya of power. For the vital being is the seat of power, of effective enthusiasm. It is in the vital that thought is transformed into will and becomes a dynamism for action. So now how do we take in, for instance, a kind of music? We must have seen that, you know, we get energy. Certain people get energy through certain kind of sensations. For example, violent sensations. They like to go to, let's say, Times Square and walk at night. For whatever reason, they feel very energetic doing it. Or they go to a marketplace. And that kind of sensation they love to take. Or a horror movie. It's so surprising. So you are taking in sensation from which you are getting power or energy. Not power, energy. Now what is this energy? It's a very dark energy. So when we flood our mind and consciousness through the door of the senses, through these sensations, then it has its own impact. That's why Sri Aurobindo writes in one of the letters, in terms of food we have seen, what you eat is less important, is not of so much importance as the occult atmosphere that it brings and the consciousness of those who are cooking it. I have seen one can fall ill if the food has been cooked in a state which is not very healthy. So she speaks of all this. So the normal remedy is to strangle and starve the vital by depriving it of all sensations. Sensations are indeed its main sustenance, and without them it falls asleep, grows sluggish and starves to death. So a lot of people try to do that. They say, no, we will not go out. We will not, because when they go out, you are flooded with sensations. They can't take it. And they don't know how to really manage and handle that. So they like to seclude themselves. They even like to cut themselves off from all the external impacts because it's difficult to take. So they starve the vital. So the vital slowly is not capable of any kind of dynamic output. And then she says that there are three sources of power or energy that we get. So we have the dark energy, we have the middle kind of energy, and we have the, clean energy. And we have the pure energy. These are the sources of energy. So what are these three energies? The first, most easily accessible, it comes from below. From the physical energies through the sensations. So all the sensations that impact us, this is the usual kind of energy. And we know what kind of sensations go around in the world. The second is on its own plane, when it is sufficiently vast and receptive by contact with the universal vital forces. Here it's so important, they are animal lovers and they love the animals. But this is one part. One should be kind and loving to animals. But sleeping in the same room with the animals is never recommended. So people try to, you know, mother loved animals, so they do it. She has said many times, they bring diseases. So loving and caring is one part. And putting an animal inside your room, I have only once experienced this with, there was a dog whom I really cared for, and this dog was, because the dog catchers were taking away these dogs, all the dogs, because the Prime Minister was coming. And myself and Dr. Mandeep, we caught hold of this dog on the road and dragged literally. He would not come because he is enjoying life and doesn't know why I am taking. So I knew this fellow will be caught and taken away. So we dragged the dog all the way, put in my inside my room, and then I closed. I said, now you be around. The dog knew me. So it was a little moving around, and finally we gave him something to eat till the Prime Minister goes. So then finally I made him sleep. Now I was sleeping in the same room. I would experience all that kind of different kind of energy all the time. I just didn't have a restful sleep. Otherwise there is no problem. I mean I've been to all kinds of houses, and it's a very nice dog, not a violent dog. Many of us may have seen also, and very nice dog, pretty conscious dog. But the energies which were coming literally from the dog, because he is sleeping near the cot, below the, not on the cot. So then those energies come. So one should be very careful, because even that's why sleeping with who is there in the room, all this at some point, all these things do matter. But again, we must learn to endure. There are situations where you just can't help it. You can't say in the flight, I want to sit with a sadhak next to me. You have to learn. So maybe the person will say, sir, you change your seat. You seem to me a very uncouth fellow. So we have to understand in what sense, because some people become very fussy. I met people, sadhaks under inverted comma. So in Gurugram, they are feeling hungry. So I said, okay, we'll go and pick up something. No, I can't go to a restaurant, and I can't go here. I said, come on, today I am going to tell you how to eat in a restaurant, teach you. So took to the restaurant. And you cut yourself. You don't have to see here, there, anywhere. You have to eat food just for sustenance. End of the story. Speak some beautiful things. You should not be affected at all by anything. So it was the first experience of the person eating in a hotel. And it was a nice place. Cool, decent place. I'm not talking of place. Now, of course, there are places which are not so healthy. Dim lights and all kinds of songs going on. Definitely. There should be a choice. Equally, the capacity to endure. But you can cut yourself off from those sensations. It's possible. You don't have to physically do anything. The third is usually to which it usually opens only in a great aspiration for progress, comes to it from above by the infusion and absorption of spiritual forces and inspiration. This one can do anywhere and everywhere. So one can do it any place to be in a state of inner aspiration. It opens the door, because divine is everywhere and in everything. And to these sources, men always try more or less to add another, which is for them at the same time the source of most of their torments and misfortunes. Now here she is saying something which is so important to remember. It is the interchange of vital forces with their fellows. Look at the beauty of mother's language. She says, usually in groups of two, which they most often mistake for love. Usually in groups of two, which they mistake for love, but which is only the attraction between two forces that take pleasure in mutual interchange. So, especially when we speak. So when two people speak, three people speak, and most of the time when in a group it takes place, and it's well known, the cautious dress tend to be pulled down, one gets into that vital, whatever it is, so exuberance. So one should try to remain conscious in all these. Now we cannot avoid all the situations in life, but this is what she is cautioning us, to remember us. Thus, if we do not wish to starve our vital, so what do we do then? Because many people take the other course. So they say, we'll not meet anyone, we'll not smile at anyone, we'll look down and walk. So this is a starvation. This is not what she is advising. She is advising, sensations must not be rejected or diminished in number and intensity. So it's a very interesting, like a microsurgery she is teaching us. Neither should we avoid them.
There are people who can't go even in satsang groups. They've told me, we can't go. Why? Because these kind of people are there. Then they start talking, things which immediately after the nice satsang, they talk all kinds of things. You cut yourself off. Nobody compels you to, be dragged. But they don't go. They cannot mix even with devotees, even in a center. It's so difficult. Because they cannot, it's a kind of deficiency. But very difficult to explain. So she's saying neither to starve or diminish. So what is she saying? Rather, we must make use, neither should we avoid them. Rather, we must make use of them with wisdom and discernment. Sensations are an excellent instrument of knowledge and education. And then she says very clearly, but to make them serve these ends, they must not be used egoistically for the sake of enjoyment in a blind and ignorant search for pleasure and self-satisfaction. That's what I want us to remember. In an Air Force party, nobody compels you. You have to drink or you have to smoke or you have to indulge in a kind of conversation. You may be around with people and you may be inwardly doing. Mother, I have seen a person, he's so wonderful thing, his wife would take him for a dance and he'll go for a dance. Actually, yogi. And a pilot, fighter pilot. And then somebody asked him, how are you? And he said, main to bhajan karta hun ji. He was so clear about it. He's dancing with the woman, his wife, sorry. But for him at that point of time, he is lost in his own ecstasy. What does it matter? So one can reach that point where in all situations and circumstances, main to bhajan karta hun ji, and it was so true. One could sense it in this man's life and presence. That for him what matters is his Lord. So that is where one has to. So she is saying discernment. So if he was searching for pleasure, drinking, making contacts, trying to impress people, that's what people do in party, then obviously it's something she's not advising against. The senses should be capable of enduring everything without disgust or displeasure. But at the same time, they must acquire and develop more and more the power of discerning the quality, origin and effect of the various vital vibrations in order to know whether they are favorable to harmony, beauty and good health, or whether they are harmful to the balance and progress of the physical being and the vital. That's all that is required. Inner discernment, inner detachment, ability to cut off from what you want to cut off. How do we do when somebody is shouting or going on quarreling? And what do you do? Inwardly you cut off. Don't say outwardly, main baat nahi karunga. Andar se ho raha hai. After some time you can say, okay, we can be quiet. Better to be quiet. It requires much greater mastery actually, much greater mastery than to outwardly avoid and cut. So see what remedy she is giving. It is by enlightening, strengthening and purifying the vital and not by weakening it. See, Mother and Shurvindo, nowhere children used to play downstairs. Ringa ringa roses and street, all kind. Now many sadhaks find it so difficult. Oh, there is honking going on. Who is asking you to concentrate on the honking going on? Concentration should be such that regardless of what is happening outside, you can continue to concentrate. It doesn't matter. That's what actual concentration means, that you are not disturbed by anything outside. So the senses are able to endure it and yet they are not driven or dragged into it, identified with it. So she says, enlightening, strengthening. Strengthening is by bearing it. Enlightening, discerning what is harmful and what is healthy. And third is purifying. So the refined sensations, you seek that, the vital, and not by weakening it that one can contribute to the true progress of the being. To deprive oneself of sensations is therefore as harmful as depriving oneself of food. But just as the choice of food must be made wisely and solely
for the growth and proper functioning of the body, so too the choice of sensations and their control should be made with a very scientific austerity and solely for the growth and perfection of the vital. So she is not saying that deliberately go into places where all kinds of jing-bang music is going on. No, you choose a music, choose something very nice, beautiful, uplifting. But at the same time, if you find yourself in a situation, let's say on a road where people are honking, so we should be able to endure it and not start getting jittery and nervous. That's what she is explaining to us. It is by educating the vital, by making it more refined, more sensitive, more subtle, and one should almost say more elegant in the best sense of the word, that one can overcome its violence and brutality, which are in fact a form of crudity and ignorance of lack of taste. So violence in speech, violence in various kinds of actions, even in terms of dealing with material objects, one can be pretty violent. Mother speaks about how Champaklalji, she was saying how she has trained him. So would drag the chair and she said, "Don't do that, Champaklal." So, you know, he suddenly realized that this is not the way to do it. This is a kind of violence. We do it very often, drag it and put it and dharam, dhudum. On books, for example, mother has said that don't put anything on Sri Aurobindo's Savitri. I have seen people just placing books so casually, randomly. Books are something because they are a power in themselves. Just throwing them around, things may be scattered outside. Mother speaks of that in Sri Aurobindo. But they have an arrangement. There is a logic behind it. It's not like just strewn around. So they are, because there's a sensation going constantly. So there should be a, these sensations should be harmonious. So books are there. So they, the house may be full. But clutter is a different thing altogether. And books especially, you know, Mother and Sri Aurobindo's books, people put so casually, so randomly, and then they will put, I've even seen people put thali over it. And worst, in one of the Sri Aurobindo centers, I took, saw somebody put teacup over it. And in the library, they had mixed books. One volume of Sri Aurobindo, then Rajneesh, and then somebody else, and all are great people, all are... So, I said, I salute your greatness or foolishness. You cannot have discern. You cannot discern between things. But you see, people do that. They put them all together. So that discernment one has to develop. This comes with refinement. That the difference between what is what. Keep things, whatever you want to. But one must know the difference. And this is just about arranging books. The same allows, you know, is for everything. Refinement, elegance, I have seen in mother's great-granddaughter, Poonadi. Her dress, refined. I just still remember walking out of her room and going to one of the places I have forgotten. I was walking with her. She would ask me if you could come along. And I was just noticing her gait. I said, my God, this is just simply. She was holding a purse, small little purse. Not a designer, you know, all those brands. But the way she was holding the purse, it's like holding somebody's hand. I remembered how when I first held the pulse, my professor told me, have you never held a lady's hand? So I told him, sir, no. Though I don't know whether to say fortunately no or unfortunately no. Then he taught me how to hold the pulse. I said, oh... The patient will feel so comfortable. Otherwise, I have seen doctor. Show me the hand. Phat. It looks like an object. Almost a dead object. And after seeing, they'll just push it aside. I have seen it. Even tying the blood pressure. The BP will go up. Temperature. And see, these are all sensation temperature. It's like you are almost hurting the person. Pushing thing through. These are all sensations, isn't it? Do it with elegance. And then I saw her walk. That gait I cannot forget in my life. 75, that age, that walk was. I was just imagining how mother would have walked. Seeing her. Elegance, beauty, refinement.
carrying herself, as they say, beautifully. So, not tip to walk, normal walk, but with an elegance, with measured steps, with dignity, as if a queen is walking. Queens don't walk this ramp walk, catwalk. They walk with dignity, the confidence in the steps, the measured steps. So, you see, everything can be. And then she finally says, in truth, a cultivated and illumined vital can be a noble and heroic. Thank God, you know, that's like a queen. Noble and heroic. And disinterested, as it is now spontaneously vulgar, egoistic and perverted, when it is left to itself without education. So it is, why is she speaking noble and all these things? Because it's like below my dignity to respond to this. Somebody, you know, writes to you, let's say, abusive letter, or in your name. So normally, you know, I'll show the person. So once when this had happened, I say, I refuse to stoop to this level. You can't fall down to that level. You can't react at that level. Because it's vulgar. It's ignoble. Your own nobility will not allow you to react like that. So she is speaking of the heroic. Like Kshatriya, the court, Bhurishrava says all kinds of things to Krishna. Ravan says all kinds of things to Rama. And what does Rama say at the end? Shall we play the game of arrows? So that's nobility. It refuses to get down. I have known people, recently it happened that, you know, there was one sadhak and somebody, so there was some road, somebody stopped, and there was both sides, but that fellow, you know, youngsters, those rowdy fellows, he hit the car and went away. So this person got angry and take the picture and I'll do this. And then they came back and then there was a slap exchange which took place, almost a fist fight. And in the process, the person who was actually a devotee, he suffered. And then after that came to my house. You are saying what was my mistake? I said, your mistake was much greater. He said, how? I said, see, those fellows are idiots. Why are you responding to them? What has he, like, you know, he has just made some gesture and gone to you, or maybe just put a little foot on the car and said something. Why are you chasing these people? Are they worth it? Is this a fight worth it? If you have to fight, you must fight for something noble. If a woman's modesty is being outraged, by all means, even if you have to give your life, stop it. But these things, somebody says something and does something, a gesture, and you stop and begin to pick up. It's ignoble. Would, you know, a real heroic person take up a fight with any Tom, Dick and Harry? He would smile. Bacha, kya bologe? So that's called nobility and dignity. So she speaks of that. It is enough for each one to know how to transform in himself the search for pleasure into an aspiration for the supramental plenitude. If the education of the vital is carried far enough with perseverance and sincerity, it takes a long time, she is reminding. There comes a time when, convinced of the greatness and beauty of the goal, the vital gives up petty and illusory sensorial satisfactions in order to win the divine delight. And it's a constant learning. For example, you can learn always. Somebody once remarked, telling me, Dr. Pandey, you're walking, your chappals are making a lot of sound. Now, my first reaction was like, you know, what? How can you speak like this? But then I said, that's not the point. But they are making a sound, that's for sure. That person is crude. You don't say like that, not to anyone. I said, but at the same time, it's a lesson. It is making a sound. Now, I don't know how much, but I tried to walk consciously after that. Same with while eating, no? Pach, 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 pach. These are all small little things. Refined things. Now, because you grow up in a certain habit, you drink a cup of tea and make a slurp. So you learn it. So I have technically learnt it. So I asked, okay, but how does one then drink the tea? So I learned that, you know, you don't pull with the lips. I'm telling you, it's a technique. Seriously, I said, you don't pull with the lips because then it makes a slurp sound. So I said, how does one do it? So I said, put it to the lip and then till the teacup. I said, oh, that is so simple. I never imagined because I was like adamant, defiant. How can you drink tea without making that lovely sound which you enjoy? That makes you feel that you are sipping tea. So I said, that's what it is called, sipping. I was trying to justify, you know. I said, no, it's nice for you, but it doesn't, you know. So all these things you learn, the gestures, the push, everywhere, all sensations, they become refined. So it's very good to learn and grow. Not that somebody making a slurp is a bad guy. It's just that he has grown up like that. We should not, you know, castigate anyone. And suddenly it doesn't mean don't eat with hands. Eat with hands, but eat with beauty. You can eat with hands in a nice way, beautiful way. You can eat with spoon and fork in a horrible way. So the point is, sensations bring energy to the vital, and based on the kind of sensation, that kind of energy will go. We may not realize it now, but sooner or later it will begin to act. So people who watch horror movies, they are filled with fear inside. And they begin to take a perverse attraction towards horror things and even towards giving strong sensations to the body. So while one should be capable of enduring anything, at the same time, so it doesn't mean cutting off, but basically refining the vital, purifying it, ennobling it, so that it becomes incapable of certain things. Like it should be incapable of even uttering a word which is, abusive. Even to describe that the person said this to me. And we just read here how beautifully mother described that in groups of two, which they call as love. Jai Ma.